Ladies and gentlemen, we are live with another episode of the one and only Sean Sports Thought Podcast. That is right. This is episode number 425. And let's get right into it. Starting with a sport that we do not talk about often on this show, and that is golf. The PGA Tour is nearing a $3 billion investment from United States sports team owners amid ongoing negotiations with the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund, which funds the PGA's biggest rival in LIV Golf, according to ESPN. Strategic Sports Group, which includes Tom Werner and John Henry, Boston Red Sox, Pittsburgh Penguins, Arthur Blank, Atlanta Falcons, and Wick Grusbeck, Boston Celtics, quote, would infuse more than $3 billion into a new for-profit entity, PGA Tour Enterprises, according to ESPN. Mark Adonasio, Milwaukee Brewers, Cohen, Private Ventures, New York Mets, Tom Ricketts, Chicago Cubs, and Mark Lassery, Milwaukee Bucks, are also among the investors included in Strategic Sports Group. The PGA Tour has been in negotiations with multiple entities, including the Saudi PIF, to infuse money into a newly formed PGA Tour Enterprises, which would combine the commercial assets of the PIF, PGA Tour, and DP World Tour. The framework of an agreement between the three major golf brands was signed on June 6th and expires on December 31st, though it was reported on Friday that, quote, it would likely be extended if progress is being made. Under the terms of the agreement, the PGA Tour would remain in control, while the PIF and Strategic Sports Group would be minority owners. The PIF was initially, quote, hesitant to be part of a deal with the PGA Tour that includes other U.S.-based investors, according to ESPN, but, quote, becoming partners with high-profile franchise owners like Henry Blank and others was appealing. A deal with Strategic Sports Group could be announced before the start of 2024. If a deal is also reached with the PIF, more than $7 billion could be infused into PGA Tour Enterprises. The PGA Tour is more eager to complete a deal with multiple entities following John Rahm's jump to LIV Golf earlier this month. Rahm, who is ranked number three in the world, agreed to a reported multi-year contract worth more than $300 million with Saudi-backed LIV Golf. With that, let us now switch gears to some NFL. Miami Dolphins head coach Mike McDaniel announced on Friday that superstar wide receiver Tyreek Hill will be listed as questionable to play against the New York Jets on Sunday after missing practice all week with an ankle injury. According to NFL Network, McDaniel said the following about Hill's status and the decision of whether or not to let him play, saying, quote, it's his career. When we talk, this is what will happen. If he's confident he can be himself and I have the support of the trainers, he will play. If it's not, he won't. Tyreek injured his ankle during the first quarter of Monday night's 28-27 loss to the Tennessee Titans. Hill's ankle bent awkwardly underneath him while getting tackled near the sidelines by Titans cornerback Sean Murphy Bunting. After staying down for several seconds, Hill got up and began sprinting in an apparent effort to excite the crowd. Despite that, Hill sat out for the remainder of the first half, and while he returned during the second half, he did not play to his usual capacity and level. Overall, Tyreek Hill played only 47% of the offensive snaps against the Titans and was held to 4 receptions for 61 yards and no touchdowns, which was one of his least productive games of the season. When healthy, Tyreek Hill has been virtually unstoppable this season, racking up 97 receptions for a league-leading 1,542 yards and 12 touchdowns through 13 games. With Hill out of the lineup for much of Monday's game, the Miami offense looked out of sync, and if not for a couple of turnovers deep in Titans territory, the Dolphins may not have scored an offensive touchdown in the game at all. Hill's absence made his importance to the Miami offense even more evident, and it perhaps highlighted why he should be under consideration for NFL MVP honors, and perhaps also why Tua Tagovailoa should not be considered for NFL MVP honors. If Tyreek is unable to play Sunday, Tua will have to lean more heavily on Jalen Waddle and Cedric Wilson in the passing game, and McDaniel may be willing to run the ball more often than usual with Raheem Mostert and Davon Achani, the latter of whom is also questionable with a toe injury. With that, let us now switch gears to some college football. Oregon State and Washington State have taken control of the Pac-12 ahead of the final 7 months, ahead of its final 7 months as a 12-team conference. The Washington Supreme Court on December 15th denied a request to review a lower court's decision to give the universities control of the Pac-12 board, according to ESPN. The decision lifted the emergency stay granted by a Washington State Supreme Court commissioner to the University of Washington on November 28th. The November 14th decision by Whitman County Superior Court Judge Gary Libby to make OSU and WSU the sole governing members of the conference will now go into effect. The 10 schools planning to depart from the Pac-12 in August at the conclusion of the 2023-24 season will no longer be able to vote on conference decisions. Libby's initial ruling stated that whenever OSU and WSU meet as the Pac-12 board, they must create an agenda and share it with the 10 departing schools per KHQ. Departing schools impacted by the state Supreme Court's decision include Arizona, Arizona State, California, Colorado, Oregon, Southern California, Stanford, UCLA, Utah, and Washington. The 10 schools have previously accused OSU and WSU of wanting direction of the board to control the revenue earned by the Pac-12's current members. OSU and WSU argued that the 10 schools already gave up their seats on the board by sharing plans to leave the Pac-12, citing the absence of USC and UCLA representatives from board meetings after the schools announced their upcoming departures in 2022. WSU and OSU are set to play a six-game schedule against Mountain West opponents as a two-team conference in the 2024-25 season. So that is certainly interesting. Let's transition back to the NFL. Houston Texans star rookie quarterback CJ Stroud will not play in Sunday's game against the Tennessee Titans due to a concussion the team announced on Saturday. It was first reported that he would not play on Friday. He was initially listed as doubtful for Sunday's game on the team's injury report. Stroud was placed in concussion protocol after Houston's Week 14 loss to the New York Jets. He exited the game in the fourth quarter after hitting his head when he was taken to the ground after completing a pass. He was replaced by Davis Mills, who completed one pass for 4 yards. The game against the Jets was by far the worst of his young career. He entered the week leading the NFL in passing yards, but struggled against a stingy Jets defense, throwing for only 91 yards on 10 of 23 passing while getting sacked 4 times. Still, he remains the frontrunner for NFL Offensive Rookie of the Year thanks to the impressive start to his career, as he now ranks second in the league with 3,631 yards while adding 20 touchdowns and only 5 interceptions. The 2023 number 2 pick has helped engineer a swift turnaround for a Texans franchise that won only 4 games in each of the past 3 seasons, as they have a 7-6 record entering Week 15. However, Houston's schedule to end the season won't be easy, with 2 games against the Titans, a matchup against the Cleveland Browns, and their season finale against the Indianapolis Colts. With Stroud out, Mills or veteran Case Keenum could be under center on Sunday. ESPN reported Friday that both quarterbacks split reps in practice this week. Bien Aim also noted that head coach DeMeco Ryans did not say if Mills would start when asked by reporters. A 2021 third-round pick, Mills threw for 3,118 yards, 17 touchdowns, and 15 interceptions in 15 starts in 2022. Let us now transition to college basketball. So obviously, CJ Stroud, a big loss for the Texans. Let's talk about some college basketball. Juwan Howard is expected to return to the sidelines to coach Michigan on Saturday against Eastern Michigan, according to a statement released by the athletic director of the University of Michigan. Howard underwent a scheduled operation on September 15th to resect an aortic aneurysm and repair an aortic valve conditions that were identified by doctors during a routine medical check in the offseason. Associate head coach Phil Martelli has been Michigan's interim head coach while he recovered, although the Wolverines had gotten off to a poor 5-5 start to the season. Howard was involved in an altercation with strength and conditioning coach John Sanderson in a recent practice, although no disciplinary action was enforced after an internal review, according to ESPN. No punches were thrown, but the two men reportedly needed to be separated following the incident. The Athletic reported on December 10th that Howard remains under a, quote, zero-tolerance policy that was instituted by the school after striking Wisconsin assistant coach Joe Krabenhoft in February of 2022. Howard has been with the team for a few weeks in an assistant coaching capacity as he's worked his way back towards regaining his duties as head coach. He initially returned as an observer during Michigan's trip to the Bahamas for the Battle for Atlantis before entering his expanded role as an assistant. Quote, Howard has been very active at practice, Martelli said, according to MLMLive.com. I'm not going to say it's seamless, but he is very engaged. He's not a spectator. He's a participant and has been since right before the Bahamas. Howard is expected to help the team get back on track as Michigan has finished with a winning record in every year since the 2014-15 season. Let's see. Let us now talk about some NBA. With the NBA season shaping up, potential trades shape up as well. The Golden State Warriors are looking to potentially bring in some new pieces to help Steph Curry, and they are reportedly getting calls from other organizations about making deals. Per Woj of ESPN, there are several NBA GMs that have reached out to Warriors general manager Mike Dunleavy Jr. about possible trades. Quote, I know a few general managers who lobbed calls to Mike Dunleavy Jr. in the last few days. Woj said on NBA Countdown on Friday, and a lot of teams are starting to talk, they're starting to trade ideas about what interest they have in certain players. Woj believes the trade deadline is setting up to be a very busy one, and he believes the Warriors will be the heart of it. He believes some mid-tier teams will be looking to make deals with the Warriors to try to get into the playoff mix, and some lower-tier teams will be looking to get a premium from Golden State. Quote, this is going to be an interesting trade deadline. I think there's so many teams right now who think they're in position to be pretty good. And then the teams who are at the bottom of the standings, they're going to put a great premium on giving up some of their players because they don't want to look like Detroit looks right now. They don't want to look like San Antonio does. I think the asking price for good players at this trade deadline, like often, is going to be high. But I think Mike Dunleavy and Golden State, I think they're going to be very open to try and improve this team. Golden State is currently on the outside looking in when it comes to the playoffs, and it's clear the Warriors need to make a change. They are currently 10-14, which is good for 11th place in the Western Conference. The Warriors will also be without Draymond Green for at least a few games, as he has been suspended indefinitely for striking Yusuf Nurkic. Golden State had a shakeup in the starting lineup this week after Steve Kerr benched Andrew Wiggins for rookie Brandon Podziemski against the Los Angeles Clippers on Thursday. Podziemski had only 4 points in 34 minutes. He had only 4 points in 34 minutes in his first start. Wiggins had 9 points in 22 minutes off the bench. Out of the factors in the Warriors' struggles early this season has been the play of Klay Thompson, one of the struggles for sure. The veteran shooting guard is averaging 16 points per game, down from his 21.9 points per game last season. Thompson's struggles boiled over this week against the Phoenix Suns when he scored only 7 points and ultimately got benched in the final minutes of the 119-116 loss, so the Warriors are definitely struggling. Let us now switch gears back to the NFL. Teddy Bridgewater's NFL career is coming to an end, but he's going to stay around the game of football. The Detroit Lions backup quarterback told the Detroit Free Press that he plans to retire at the end of the season and move into coaching high school football, saying, quote, everything happens for a reason, injuries, highs, lows, the success, the failures, it all, it builds character, and that's what it did for me. Like, I never looked like, oh man, what if? Nah, whatever was meant for me, it played out the exact way it was meant, and I'm still with that mindset every day, and I'm just really appreciative that I'm in year 10. I tell everyone this is my last year, so I'm in my final year, and I'm just enjoying it all, man. It's unclear where Bridgewater plans to coach, though it was noted his alma mater, Miami Northwestern, has a head coaching vacancy. Bridgewater contemplated retirement last offseason when his wife gave birth to the couple's second son. He wound up returning to the league by signing a one-year deal with the Lions in August. The move reunited Bridgewater and Lions head coach Dan Campbell, who was an assistant head coach and tight ends coach for the New Orleans Saints during Bridgewater's 2 seasons with the team. Quote, I was really like content with being done, Bridgewater said of his thought process during the offseason, and it wasn't really like much that went into it. It was just I felt healthy, I could walk away on my own terms, and that was that. But when Dan, like, we talked, and it was like, man, all right, Dan, I got you. Bridgewater is doing most of his work behind the scenes with the Lions. His only appearance in a game this season was in Week 5 when he handed the ball off and took 2 kneel downs in a 42-24 win over the Carolina Panthers. It was pointed out that there is a chance that Bridgewater could start the regular season finale against the Minnesota Vikings, which was the team that originally drafted him in 2014. If the Lions have clinched a playoff spot and their seeding is locked in at that point already, then we could see Bridgewater facing the Vikings. The 31-year-old Bridgewater was the number 32 overall pick in the 2014 NFL draft. He's thrown for 15,120 yards and 75 touchdowns in 79 career games. Certainly formidable. More NFL. The Washington Commanders are reportedly likely to make some major changes to their leadership following this season. According to The Athletic, sources have indicated that head coach Ron Rivera and, quote, some front office members are expected to be fired once the campaign concludes. It was added that owner Josh Harris has always planned to part ways with Rivera at the end of the season, noting that it's, quote, really not a secret anymore. The Commanders hired Rivera prior to the 2020 season while under Dan Snyder's ownership, and while Washington won the NFC East and made the playoffs in Rivera's first season, they still were 500 or worse in each of his first 4 seasons with the team. At 5-9 this season, the Commanders are already guaranteed a sub-500 record, and they could potentially post their worst record of Rivera's tenure with the team. At one point, Washington was 3-3 and appeared to have a chance to vie for a playoff spot in the NFC, but things have gone south since then, with the Commanders losing 6 of their past 7 games and 4 in a row. Rivera was put in a tough position this season as the decision was made to go with an inexperienced quarterback in Sam Howell, who made only 1 start as a rookie last season. Also, the Commanders dealt their top 2 pass rushers in Chase Young and Montez Sweat at the trade deadline, which was contributed to Washington being last in the NFL with 30.4 points allowed a game. In their first season under offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy, the Commanders at least showed some flashes on that side of the ball, as Howell has thrown for 3,466 yards, 18 touchdowns, and 14 interceptions, while also rushing for 243 yards and 5 scores, perhaps earning himself another season as the starter. Also, second-year running back Brian Robinson has 990 total yards and 8 touchdowns and could prove to be the long-term answer in the backfield for them. Rivera is primarily a defensive coach, though, and the Commanders' failures defensively undoubtedly reflect poorly on him. Entering Sunday's road game against the Los Angeles Rams, Rivera is 26-36-1 with one playoff appearance and no playoff wins during his time with the Commanders. Rivera's time in Washington almost certainly seems to be over, but the biggest question may be whether Harris will also fire Martin Mayhew, who has been the Commanders' GM since 2021. Let's see. More NFL. Cleveland Browns defensive end Myles Garrett has been fined by the NFL for his criticism of the officials following Sunday's 31-27 win over the Jacksonville Jaguars. Per Cleveland.com, the league office handed down a $25,000 fine to Garrett after he voiced his displeasure with the officiating in Week 14. In an unprompted moment during his postgame press conference, Garrett called the officiating, quote, a travesty, among other things. Quote, it was honestly awful, he said, and the fact that they're letting them get away with hands to the face, holding, false starting, I know they called a couple, but damn, they could have called it all game. The Browns star also said his shoulder looked like it was, quote, scratched by a couple of wild feral cats from the Jags offensive line. Even with a chance to reflect on his comments, Garrett did not back down when he addressed the media again on Friday, saying, quote, right now I'm not getting any calls, so it can't get much worse than that, but I hope it has a positive effect, Garrett said. I'm not trying to offend anybody. I just want them to do their job to the best of their ability. Same here. Garrett was asked by reporters yesterday if he had been fined by the league, but he declined to comment. The comments from Garrett come as he's mired in his roughest stretch of the season. The two-time All-Pro has only 2 tackles for a loss and 0 sacks in the past 3 games. This is the first time that Garrett has gone more than 2 consecutive games without a sack since weeks 3-5 in 2022, when he missed one of those games due to an injury. Despite Garrett's frustration, the Browns were able to get the victory over the Jaguars and improve the record to 8-5. They are currently the number 5 seed in the AFC with 4 games left in the season. Garrett is on the short list for sure. To win NFL Defensive Player of the Year, he ranks 7th in the NFL with 13 sacks and is tied for 10th with 13 tackles for a loss. The Browns will host the Chicago Bears on Sunday in search of their 9th win this season, which would certainly be impressive. They have won. They have only won 9 games in a season 3 times since returning to the NFL. Let's talk about some NBA. Kevin Durant had high praise for Jalen Brunson after getting an in-person look at one of the best shooting performances in NBA history during the New York Knicks' 139-122 win over the Phoenix Suns on Friday night. The Suns star told reporters after the game that Brunson is a, quote, Hall of Fame player if he keeps it up. Brunson scored a career-high 50 points on 17 of 23 shooting with 9 assists, 6 rebounds, and 5 steals in the win. He was 12 out of 12 from the field in the second half and made all 9 of his 3-point attempts, 8 of 8 in the second half. Absolutely white hot. Per the NBA, Brunson joins Michael Jordan and Rick Barry as the only players in league history with at least 50 points, 9 assists, 5 rebounds, and 5 steals in a single game. ESPN noted Brunson is the first player in NBA history to score at least 50 points in a game without missing a single 3-pointer. Brunson's outburst sparked the Knicks' 76-point second half. They went into the break trailing the Suns 68-63, despite getting at least 13 points from Brunson, Julius Randle, and RJ Barrett. The Suns had 4 starters with at least 10 points in the first half. KD looked like he was going to match Brunson shot for shot early with 17 points and 4 made threes through the first 2 quarters. While KD leveled off in the second half, Brunson hit another level by scoring 35 points over the final 24 minutes. He's the first Knicks player to drop 50 in a game since Julius Randle's 57-point outing against the Minnesota Timberwolves on March 20th. In his second season with the Knicks, Brunson is making a strong case to be an all-star for the first time in his career. I think he was robbed last year, but certainly he will be one this year. The 27-year-old is averaging a career-high 25.6 points per game, and he ranks 9th in the league with a 46% success rate from behind the arc. So Jalen Brunson, what a performance. Let's talk about some more basketball-rated news. This is very sad, though. Los Angeles Lakers legend Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was taken to a Los Angeles hospital on Friday night when he suffered a hip injury after falling at a concert. Deborah Morales, a representative for Abdul-Jabbar, told TMZ Sports he broke his hip as a result of the fall. Paramedics were called to the scene, and the Basketball Hall of Famer was transported to UCLA Hospital for treatment. Morales told TMZ that Abdul-Jabbar is, quote, deeply appreciative of the Los Angeles Fire Department for the support they provided and the amazing medical team and doctors at UCLA Hospital who are taking great care of him. It's unclear where in Los Angeles the concert was. I have a feeling it was the Depeche Mode concert that I was at the Crypto.com Arena. Abdul-Jabbar most recently attended a Lakers game on February 7th when LeBron James passed him on the NBA's all-time scoring list. He originally set the record previously held by Wilt Chamberlain on April 5th, 1984. The 76-year-old Kareem is regarded as one of the most important and influential athletes in history. His number 33 jersey has been retired by the Lakers, Milwaukee Bucks, and UCLA basketball. In addition to his work on the basketball court, Abdul-Jabbar is an icon of the civil rights movement. He was awarded the Presidential Medal of Freedom in 2016. Let's switch gears back to the NFL. Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes and head coach Andy Reid are reportedly poised to pay the price for criticizing the officiating following last week's 20-17 loss to the Buffalo Bills. According to Adam Schefter, Reid was fined $100,000 for violating, quote, longstanding league rules prohibiting public criticism of game officials, and Mahomes was hit with a $50,000 fine for unsportsmanlike conduct as well as criticism of the officiating crew. Both Reid and Mahomes spoke out against an offsides call on wide receiver Kadarius Toney late in the fourth quarter, with Reid calling it a bit embarrassing for the NFL. The call wiped out what would have been a go-ahead 49-yard touchdown pass that saw Mahomes hit tight end Travis Kelce, who then lateraled the ball to Toney for the score. Like Reid, Mahomes made his displeasure with the officiating clear as he appeared to be screaming at the officials from the sidelines after the Chiefs turned the ball over on downs to seal the Buffalo win. Video later surfaced on X, formerly known as Twitter, of Mahomes continuing to complain about the offsides call while meeting with Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen at midfield after the game. Per ESPN, Mahomes said he had never seen offensive offsides called during his NFL career, and he expressed displeasure with officials not issuing a warning before the penalty, saying, quote, I've played 7 years and never had offensive offsides called. That's elementary school stuff we're talking about. There was no warning throughout the entire game. Then you wait until there's a minute left in the game to make a call like that. It's tough. Lost for words. It's tough. Regardless if we win or lose, just the end of another game and we're talking about the refs. It's just not what we want for the NFL and for football. According to USA Today, referee and crew chief Carl Sheffer spoke to a pool reporter after the game and noted that no warning is required if where a player lines up is so, quote, egregious that it blocks the official's view of the ball, which was the case with Toney. With last week's loss, the Chiefs dropped to 8-5 on the season, and they have now dropped 3 of their past 4 games and 2 in a row. Also entering play Saturday, the Chiefs held only a 1-game lead over the Denver Broncos in the AFC West. Mahomes and the Chiefs typically always find a way to get back on track as they have won 2 of the past 4 Super Bowls, including last season, but a lack of production from the wide receiver position has been looming large. Kansas City will attempt to bounce back Sunday when it faces the abysmal 3-10 New England Patriots on the road. Let's talk about some more NFL. The Cincinnati Bengals scored 21 fourth quarter points to overcome a 2-touchdown deficit, force overtime, and ultimately defeat the Minnesota Vikings 27-24 on Saturday afternoon at Paycor Stadium. Bengals quarterback Jake Browning shined once again in place of injured superstar Joe Burrow, completing 29 out of 42 passes for 324 yards and 2 touchdowns, 1 interception as well. T. Higgins caught both touchdown passes, including an acrobatic 21-yard snag and an astute backward stretch to cross the pylon with 39 seconds left in regulation. After the point after attempt, the Bengals and Vikings were tied at 24. Both teams traded empty possessions to start overtime, but the Bengals took advantage of their second chance after Browning found Tyler Boyd for 44 yards downfield to the Vikings' 13-yard line. Soon afterward, Evan McPherson knocked home a 29-yard field goal for the victory. Unfortunately, Cincinnati suffered multiple injuries in this game. DJ Reader was carted off with a potentially significant quad injury, per NFL Network. Wide receiver Jamar Chase suffered a right shoulder injury in the fourth quarter and did not return. For the Vikings, running back Ty Chandler amassed 157 total yards and 1 touchdown. Jordan Addison paced the team with 6 catches, 111 yards, and 2 scores in his own right. Nick Mullins threw for 303 yards and 2 scores, but also threw 2 interceptions as well. With the win, the Bengals improved to 8-6. For now, they occupy the second AFC wildcard spot. The 8-5 Cleveland Browns sit ahead of them in the wildcard race, while 5 other teams, the Buffalo Bills, Pittsburgh Steelers, Indianapolis Colts, Houston Texans, and Denver Broncos, entered the day tied for the final wildcard spot at 7-6. According to ESPN, Pittsburgh held the final AFC wildcard spot by virtue of numerous tiebreakers. Meanwhile, the Vikings dropped to 7-7, and now the door is wide open for the final 2 spots in the NFC wildcard race. Minnesota is still 6th in the NFC and holds down the second wildcard spot, but 5 teams, the Green Bay Packers, New Orleans Saints, Atlanta Falcons, Seattle Seahawks, and Los Angeles Rams, are all tied at 6-7, just 1.5 game back. Right now, the Packers lead those teams and own the final playoff spot due to tiebreakers, per ESPN.com. The Bengals will now visit the Pittsburgh Steelers on Saturday, December 23rd at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. Meanwhile, the Vikings will host the Detroit Lions on Sunday, December 24th at 1 p.m. So there you have it. Back to some NBA. Phoenix Suns guard Bradley Beal is going to be back on the shelf. Beal is expected to miss, quote, a few weeks with a right ankle injury suffered in Friday's loss to the New York Knicks, according to The Athletic. An MRI on Beal's ankle confirmed no major damage, so that's good news. The news comes after Suns head coach Frank Vogel told reporters Friday that Beal sprained his ankle and would be out indefinitely. Beal suffered the injury in the first quarter of Friday's matchup. He pulled up from deep and came down on the heel of Knicks veteran Dante DiVincenzo, appearing to twist his ankle before hitting the court in pain. DiVincenzo was assessed a flagrant one on the play, and Beal took his free throws before heading to the locker room. The injury is a tough blow for both Beal and the Suns, as the veteran has been in and out of the Phoenix lineup since arriving in a trade from the Washington Wizards during the offseason due to a back injury. Beal missed the first seven games of the season before returning for a three-game stretch in November. He then hit the shelf again for nearly a month before returning on the court on Tuesday against the Golden State Warriors. In only six games this season, he's averaging 14.7 points, 3.3 rebounds, and 3.2 assists while shooting 44.9% from the floor and 42.9% from three. The Suns brought in Beal during the offseason with hopes that he could form a new big three alongside Kevin Durant and Devin Booker. However, the trio has not found any success just because of all of their injuries. Let us now talk about some UFC. Leon Edwards successfully retained the UFC welterweight championship with a unanimous decision win over Colby Covington in the main event of UFC 296 from T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, Nevada. The official scorecards were 49-46, 49-46, and 49-46 unanimous decision for the winner. And still, the UFC welterweight champion of the world, Leon Rocky Edwards. The first surprise of the fight came at the start. The usually ultra-aggressive Colby Covington allowed Edwards to take the lead in the opening round, stalking down the challenger as Covington circled. That was very surprising. Rocky's kickboxing acumen was on display. He stood at range and picked apart Colby early on the feet, chipping away at his legs and body with kicks. Covington showed some signs of life in the third round. He shot for a takedown and briefly had Edwards on the ground, but when the champion responded by getting up and scoring a takedown of his own, the momentum just died right there. Covington had a few more moments in the fourth round, but Edwards was still able to work out of situations, do some damage, and control the fight overall. Analysts were surprised at just how easy Leon Edwards made it look like against an uninspiring Covington. The early leg kicks were clearly a part of Leon's game plan, and they paid big dividends late in the fight with visible damage to Colby's legs. Edwards has now successfully defended his belt twice, and he's starting to carve out his own legacy as champion apart from Kamaru Usman. Edwards won the belt by knocking the Nigerian Nightmare out and confirming his championship status with a split decision win over Usman in the rematch. For years, Edwards was the contender, quietly putting together a win streak. He hasn't lost since 2015 when Usman beat him by unanimous decision. Now he's a champion with an 11-fight win streak. The only bout that didn't go Edwards' way was a no contest against Bilal Muhammad when an accidental eye poke to left Muhammad unable to continue. There's a good chance that we haven't seen the last fight between those two. Muhammad has done nothing but win since that fateful night. He's picked up five wins since that night, extending his own winning streak to nine. Edwards is ready for that challenge, but also acknowledged that Muhammad could have someone else skip ahead of him. After all, Covington cut to the front of the line after being away for nearly 2 years. Quote, if I have to fight Bilal, I'll fight Bilal, Edwards said per MMA Junkie. I feel like I've proven I'm way better than him anyway just from one round. If he's next, I'll happily engage in it, and it's fine. I believe I'm going to fight them all anyway, so why not fight them all as a champion? Whether it's Muhammad or someone like Shavkat Rakhmonov, who beat Stephen Wonderboy Thompson via second-round submission on the UFC 296 main card, Edwards is continuing to prove that he is, as of now, the best welterweight in the world. Transitioning back to the NFL, Aaron Rodgers will reportedly be medically cleared to play, quote, this week upcoming for the New York Jets, according to Adam Schefter of ESPN. Rodgers was originally cleared to practice on November 29th, although it appears that he's continued to make progress in his recovery from a significant Achilles injury that he suffered on the Jets' first drive of the season. However, Schefter noted that the 40-year-old would not automatically suit up for the Jets in the Christmas Eve matchup against the Washington Commanders, even if he gets cleared. New York must activate Rodgers to its roster by Wednesday, otherwise he cannot be activated this season. The team's upcoming matchup with the Miami Dolphins could affect the front office's decision to add him to the active roster per NFL Network. Sitting at 5-8, the Jets are on the fringe of the AFC playoff picture. A loss to Miami on Sunday combined with the Bills defeating the Cowboys would result in the Jets being eliminated from the postseason. However, a victory against the Dolphins or a Bills loss would keep the Jets mathematically alive. It was also noted that Rodgers will be vocal about his desire to get back on the field if they beat Miami. The four-time MVP has stated that New York needs to remain in playoff contention for him to consider returning before the 2024 season, saying, quote, "I don't think that would make a ton of sense," he said on November 30th. When asked about playing for the Jets after they've been eliminated, a comeback this year before the four-month mark, January 11th, would mean I'm not 100% healthy, so it would be a risk for myself to even sign off on. If we are out of it, I would be surprised if the Jets and doctors would okay that comeback. So that is the latest on Aaron Rodgers. And ladies and gentlemen, that is all we have for this episode of the Sean Sports Talk Podcast. Didn't feel like a long episode, but we did crack 30 minutes. Thank you guys so much for listening. I'll see you guys in the next one. I'm out. Peace.